everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my engineer producer, Tom Fairbanks. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, the 8th of September, 2022, as the 70-year reign of Queen Elizabeth II comes to an end with her passing at the age of 96. This is the way it was presented to the world on the BBC at 10:35 Tucson time this morning.
This is BBC News from London. Buckingham Palace has announced the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. In a statement, the palace said the Queen died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. The King and the Queen Consort will remain at Balmoral this evening and will return to London tomorrow. BBC Television is broadcasting this special programme reporting the death of Her Majesty the Queen.
There you have it. Rest in peace, Your Majesty. Tom, that was all the way that was handled on the BBC, and I was fortunate enough to hear that broadcast history. I switched over from KVOI to BBC on satellite driving in and heard that live. All of that was part of something called Operation London Bridge, which was a predetermined everything about the funeral, the way it would be handled. The presenters on the BBC had on black suits, black ties. I've got a black T-shirt on in honor of Her Majesty today behind the microphone. But all that was predetermined.
Yeah, it seems to me like her health has probably been going downhill. We just haven't been told about it.
Yes.
Until it got to the point where they needed to bring the family in,
and it was
at that point.
Yep. It'd be a red letter day in history. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, which we're going to do right now with Steve Kasachek, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, representing Tucson's 6th Ward. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you, Bill?
Doing real well. Very important day in history for sure.
Yeah, I actually shared with some of my staff here today. Sitting on my desk, I've got a Life magazine that I gathered up out of my mom's house after she died a couple of years ago, from 1943. And the photograph on the cover of the Life magazine is Princess Elizabeth. She was 17 years old at the time, and it is just fascinating to go through the magazine and look through all of what was going on in the world. And reflecting on that now as to all of what she lived through and what she was involved with setting policy. This was right in the middle of World War II, and I mean, think of where we've gone, and since in the time that she's been ascending to a position of authority in Great Britain, the World War II, all of the turmoil that we've seen in the Middle East throughout that time, global warming changes, the changes in the EU, the collapse, of it, and so she's been through all of those, and just looking back at this Life magazine is kind of reflective. By the way, it sold for 10 cents in 1943.
Wow. Yeah, and then 1952, she received the news that she had become the queen. She was in Kenya, at a place called the Ark. It was it's still there.
It is. I have been to the Ark.
I have too. Anne and I were there in 1982. But that was the location there in Kenya. She was doing some game viewing with her husband, Philip, when the news came that she was the queen. So
I did not know that.
Yep. A little bit of history there for you. I did not know you had been to the Ark. We've both been to the Ark.
Yeah, so yeah, we should let the people know what that is. It's not a ship
nope.
in the middle of Kenya.
No.
It is a very cool viewing place where you are. They have a huge salt lick that's outside of this just a stone structure, and they get you up in the middle of the night to see all the wildlife, anything from rhinoceroses to lions and all the different things come in just to take part in the salt lick in the middle of the night. It's very, very cool. I got
a
cool video.
And they woke us up at a little bit after 2 one morning. We were there to tell us to go to the game viewing area. There was a bongo. And I will never forget how exciting that was to see a bongo that was at the salt lick. So I think bongos are pretty endangered animals right now. But anyway, you're going all in on energy in your ward office, aren't you?
This is such an amazing project, this plastic reuse project that we've got going on. The community has so completely bought into this. I can't even tell you how many times people walk in the office and the first thing out of their mouth is, finally, there's something I can do with this non-recyclable plastic. I mean, try walking through a grocery store sometime and coming out with something without coming out with plastic. You can't do it. And so in the first 5 weeks-ish that we've been running this, we have turned in over 5 tons of non-recyclable plastic to be baled and to be transformed into these construction-grade building blocks. And when I say 5 tons, remember, we're talking about bubble wrap and plastic bottles and things. This is not, you know, stuff that weighs a bunch.
No. I
mean, you know, so we have a 30-cubic yard roll-off that's sitting out behind the ward office right now that is filled up twice a week. We have to take it out to Jason Tankersley's place, and we dump it out there. He's going to bale the plastic. We'll send it over to Bifusion in Gardena, California. They'll make the blocks, and we expect to get about 90 blocks per ton. But in addition to that, though, that's just that 5+ tons is just what we've gotten from you know, consumers, people who've heard about it, and they're you know, self-selecting and separating out at their homes. We've also gotten a plastics producer, the people that make the labels that go around Diet Coke and, you know, the other kind of bottles that you find in the grocery store. Just those labels that you never really kind of think about, that somebody also has to make that little plastic, you know, identifier. And they, through the process that they use, they roll this up on like 5 foot in diameter rolls, and if the ink smudges or something, they can't use it, obviously, because you don't want to go to the store and buy something with smudged label. They are generating almost 100,000 pounds of plastic waste per month just out of that one facility.
Wow.
We've had contact. I'm in touch with the zoo. Just yesterday, I was talking to folks over at the university about engaging with them on this. And so I had set this pilot program up to run through the end of the calendar year, but we're not going to get there. I already plan on moving forward with doing this region-wide with the city council. And I'm expecting the county will be on board with this also. But I'm going to be bringing this back to the council before the end of the calendar year, because to have one drop-off site in the entire region is just not right for people. I've got people driving in from Oro Valley, people coming up from Green Valley. There was literally a guy who drove down from Phoenix last week, and he came in and said, "I brought you a bunch of plastic. Can you do this up in Phoenix?" Well, you know, I'm kind of focused on Tucson right now, but, you know, thanks for driving 200 miles to drop off your plastic. The city of Flagstaff, Bill, last week permitted a 600-square-foot, 2-bedroom, 1-bath house that they're going to be making out of the plastic block.
Mm.
And so there are so many different uses to this. We've gotten a bench in one park. We're doing a trash enclosure at El Rio Community Center. We'll have 4 more benches out at Himmel Park. I've already contracted to do a Ramada in a dog park out in one of our city parks. The plastics producer is going to do some stuff out of their place. University, I was talking to them yesterday about doing an enclosure for a parking and transportation facility. everything that we're using these plastic blocks for is something that is helping the supply chain issue in terms of it's difficult right now to find cinder block, and just, you know, the quarries are backlogged. And we're diverting plastic out of a landfill to do construction that that otherwise would just be winding up in the with a product that would otherwise just be ending up in the landfill. So completely all in on it, and this is a really real credit to the community who has so fully bought into this. And there's not a single business or commercial enterprise that I've reached out to that has kind of turned their nose up at it and said we're not interested. It's all about how can we make it more convenient for people to participate. And having one drop-off site at my ward office is not the way to do that. But over 5 tons in 5 weeks, that's pretty good.
It is. What about Oregon, where I was last week? They have outlawed all plastic bags. Is that something the city of Tucson would ever consider? And could it be done, or would the state overrule something like that?
They already did. So we already did consider that. And the state, in about a nanosecond, adopted a preemption law that said that the local jurisdictions cannot ban single-use plastic bags. We can use them in this product, though. Anything that you cannot put into the recycle bin, we'll take. And so what people are doing right now is they're taking those single-use bags to grocery stores who are collecting them, and we'll take them all here. Bring them on.
All right, Steve Kasachek, stay with us. Mona's Danish Bakery, one of our great sponsors, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Steve, it's about time for you to make a Mona's run, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mother-in-law's waiting for another Kringle.
Mona's, with a wide variety of beautiful pastries, including the Kringle, open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning. They close at 3 in the afternoon, Tuesday through Saturday. 7 to 2 on Sunday, they are closed. They take a day of rest on Monday. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Steve Kay right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, 3384 East River Road. Green Things, beautiful 13-acre site. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They are, well, they've been in business now over 50 years, and they are open daily. Perfect time of year to get some fall color in your garden. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go back to the live line. Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacha, representing Ward 6, is with us on the live line. The Reed Park Reimagined Open House. Steve Kasacha is from 5 to 7 this Saturday afternoon at the DeMeester Outdoor Performance Center. Are you hearing what are you hearing about this reimagining of the park? Is there any blowback about concerns about ball fields or anything else?
Well, so a couple things. There has been a pretty substantial response to the call from our Parks and Rec staff as to, you know, what do you want to see Reed Park become? Is it what you want it to be now? How can we tweak it, or how can we make substantial changes? We are not hearing a lot about to completely reimagine it. People want to see things such as if you're using the jogging path along 22nd Street or along Broadway, you're pretty much right next to the traffic. So how can you make that a more enjoyable experience for people? It's a multi-use path, not just jogging. That's one thing we've heard. People have also suggested more Ramada space for families and for, you know, kind of community activities. One of the pieces of concern that I have heard, and I've also raised it with our parks staff, is that one of the proposals right now is there's a quad of four baseball fields that's sort of right in the middle of Reed Park, right next to High Corbett Field. Some of the proposals are to do away with at least two or three of those ball fields and just have a single ball field. The issue I've raised with our park staff, and I know that they've heard this from some of the adult leagues, and also from that quad is used by some of the Korean leagues and some other people who come in and use it, is that when the adult leagues and when some of these senior leagues are in play, they use them all. And there are not alternative sites around the community for that kind of an activity. So that, if you're asking for blowback, that is the only piece that I've really heard. And I share the sentiment that unless we simply want to send people out to the Keno Sports Complex out on Ajo, which is not nearly as convenient as being in Reed Park, then you need to maintain that quad. But most of the comments that we're getting are more along the lines of tweak it, don't crack the egg and just refry the whole thing, because people like pretty much what we've got going on over at Reed Park right now.
The water situation with these contaminants. The front page of the Star had something about the state is getting some federal money, but some are complaining it's just a drop in the bucket for what is needed to remediate that area.
It is absolutely a drop in the bucket, and for this, and the problem is that the federal government, who is responsible for the contamination, and I say that because it is largely Department of Defense related activities. that are responsible. Historically, they've been using a product, without getting too deeply into the weeds, called an aqueous film-forming foam, AFFF. It's a firefighting product that the Department of Defense has spec'd for every military base in this country to use on the jet fuel fires that they have out on the base. In Europe, all over the world, they're using a different firefighting foam that doesn't have the PFAS in it, the perfluorinated compounds that are causing the contamination. Our Department of Defense has specifically specified this product because in testing that they've done, they found that they put the test flames out 6 seconds quicker. Now, if I'm the pilot in that plane, that 6 seconds means a heck of a lot to me. What we are seeing, though, is that this AFFF has caused a significant contamination problem immediately south of our central well field. It's also out on the southwest side of town where they've got a history of TCE contamination and 1,4 dioxin and other contaminants, where we have already been to the well with the military, and they have finally stepped up and funded a treatment facility for the TCE and the other contaminants. We just got lucky out there that one of our treatment facilities out there had carbon filters in them that just by chance also filter out the PFAS. But we've gotten to the point where the PFAS contaminations are so significant that we've had to shut the plant down because the carbon filters are super saturated with this stuff. So long-winded answer to the point that you're saying is the federal funding sufficient to take care of the problem? Not even close. And one of the reasons the federal government is kind of slow-walking this is that they recognize that every community in the country that has a military base in it has very likely got a PFAS contamination problem as well. And so they're looking at a multi-billion-dollar problem. And for them to start to siphon some of these dollars out, and to their credit, right now they've got several pieces of legislation that have earmarked PFAS remediation dollars. But in the city of Tucson, just for an example of scale, Tucson Water has already spent over $50 million out of our own pocket just in containing and identifying the plume that we've got in the city of Tucson. That's $50 million just from one city, and it's not even treating it. I mean, that is to do test wells and to do water treatment testing to see how extensive the contamination is. That's not a penny to build a treatment facility. And we're going to need multiple treatment facilities to contain this. So it's a hundreds of millions of dollar problem for the city of Tucson. It's a tens of billions of dollar problem at the federal level. So what they just earmarked for the state of Arizona is, you correctly use the metaphor, is a drop in a bucket. We need buckets of water. We don't need drops.
And it comes at a time when we are in this water crisis. Yep. Here, not only the city of Tucson, but the state of Arizona. It's a terrible situation.
We serve Colorado River water to 60 or 70% of our customers, and so we have been fortunate in that the 144,000 acre feet of CAP water that we get, we've been able to bank about a third of that, about 44,000 acre feet. And by bank it, I mean put it in the ground. And so we have a 5 or 6 year supply of groundwater that is stored right now underground. What we do not need to have happen is for the Bureau of Reclamation to come in, and they're going to, by the way, they're going to come in and they're going to reduce our CAP allocation because all seven basin states are just sucking the Colorado River dry. So the federal government will come in and they will reduce our allocation. That means we are going to, more sooner than we had planned to, become more heavily reliant on our groundwater. Therefore, it cannot be contaminated with PFAS. So you have absolutely correctly framed the problem, and it's an existential problem. This is not, you know, we're not going to all of a sudden start seeing a new snowpack in the Colorados, and the Colorado is going to start overtopping its bank. Those days are long gone, and everybody knows it. And it's about time that we recognize that this is an existential threat to this region. I was the only one who voted against taking our full allocation of the Colorado River water this time. And the reason for that is we got to start leading by example. And the days of us banking water underground while the Colorado River is running dry need to be in our rearview mirror.
Yeah, and you really framed it well, because we had Terry Goddard, the former Attorney General of Arizona, on the show. He's the head of the CAP Board of Directors, yesterday on the show. And he said, we have to now. It is a whole new ball game, new way of looking at water sustainability.
Absolutely correct. And it's not just the city of Tucson. It's Arizona, it's California, it's Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, all of the seven basin states. Everybody's got a straw in that river. And because of the law of the river, they knew the day that the Colorado River Pact was formed, they knew that day that if everybody took what they were entitled to, in quotes, we'd suck the river dry. And guess what? It's happening.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Bill. Take care of yourself.
All right, Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, representing Ward Number 6 in the city of Tucson. Midway through the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition, former Parade Magazine science editor Dr. David Levy will be with us on our live line when we continue after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a 3-hour drive east of Tucson to a beautiful area of the Southwest, namely the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment of New Mexico. Find out more about all the great things to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, and great places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. What say we go on the live line to Vail, Arizona, The home of the Observatory of Dr. David Levy, the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, former science editor of Parade magazine, now head of and founder of the Sharing of the Sky science education organization. He's one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, 23 comets. David Levy, how are you, sir?
Hello, Bill. This is, we had a real list of topics to discuss today, but I think what has happened has totally changed that, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
George VI was king when I was born,
mm-hmm.
and Elizabeth took over in 1952 when I was only 4 years old. And today we're really thinking about the passage of time and the passage of lives. And I think I will begin with the quotation of the month, then, which I have changed in the last few minutes, to some lines that I wrote in memory of my father-in-law, who died back in 2001. And it's called Elegy for Dad. Now, I know that he loved Robert W. Service, and I know Queen Elizabeth loved Service as well. I don't think you could be alive and not enjoy the cremation of Sam McGee. So these are the lines that I wrote for him. To cherished Dad, I was so glad to join your family. Your love of war life and of your wife were wondrous things to see. Your sense of fun made everyone smile when they heard you say a little joke that was the stroke that we needed to hear that day. You'd always fight to do what's right, no matter what came to you. But you didn't boast about the host of times this worked for you. Your sage advice was always nice for family and friends to hear. Most of all, you stood 10 foot tall in the hearts of your most dear.
Very nice.
You and Mom, it must be fun to remember your children for. Joni and Gail and Wendy of Vail. And Sandy made one more. Your pride never hid in what they did, but one thing you never saw was with each one came in hopes, with each one seems in hopes and dreams to follow after you. We sadly watched the terrible cost the years were to your health and shared your hell each time you fell, and we did what we could to help. You lost your sight but not your fight. When we asked, are you in pain? You wore a smile that stretched a mile and said, I can't complain. My dad you knew from years ago when Wendy and I were small. When my daddy died in 85, I took quite a fall. But 12 years passed, and then at last you offered me once more a chance to shout, yeah, hi, Dad, no doubt. That feeling made me sore. I miss you, Dad. I wish you had more time to spend down here. Wherever you go, I want you to know I feel you are still so dear. The trips we took would fill a book, but what was second to none was that pleasure I felt that life has dealt me, the pleasure, to the honor to be your son.
Very nice. David, when did you write that in honor of your father?
It was actually on the plane. My father-in-law was still living, but I had been called to New York because they said that he wouldn't be alive for more than a couple of days, which is what happened. And I wrote that poem while sitting on the plane, on the flight to New York.
You know, these kinds of occasions, when you think back 70 years, a reign of Queen Elizabeth II, and, you know, no matter how famous you are or rich or poor, we all share that same fate, don't we, David, that awaits us someday?
Yeah, we do. It's, her death today is no one's surprise. I mean, we all knew that your health was failing.
Right.
But it comes as a shock nevertheless, because she was a part of all our lives. And I know that there was one day that that a number of years ago that I was on a radio program on the BBC about comets.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like the one I have with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I said a few things, and there were some British amateurs who said a few things. But one of the people who happened to be listening to that program was Elizabeth II.
Wow.
And she immediately got in touch with the British people who were on the program and invited them to the palace just for tea.
Wow, it's a great story. Why don't we leave it right there, David? Thank you very much for sharing some of those memories, that very touching poem, certainly, about your dad. Thanks, David.
Okay, thank you, Bill, and we'll see you next month.
We sure will. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, Attorney Don Luce. Yes, there are 10 initiatives that voters will be trying to decide on in November, but we'll talk about three very interesting ones with Don right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studio. We welcome once again to the program Attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce, the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and never a shortage of Arizona laws, especially, well, when the legislature meets you, there'll be hundreds of new laws, I'm sure, every time. Estate Planning in Arizona is Don's other book, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the Arizona ballot measures. They're always a very interesting when you look at the kind of the diversity of some of these measures. Well, we've got 10 of them that voters will decide on.
We do. And that's not an unusual number, by the way. Of the 10 measures that will be on the November 8th ballot, 8 of them were referred by the legislature. That's one way that an initiative makes it to the ballot. And 2 of them were citizen initiatives. In other words, the petitions contained enough signatures to get the measure on the ballot. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting, especially in our state, how that works, because it really depends on the nature of the initiative as to how many signatures are required. So start with the proposition that you look to the number of votes cast for the governor in the last election, okay? You use that number to determine how many signatures are required for constitutional amendments, and that would be 15% of the votes cast for the governor in the last election. Mm-hmm. So in 2022, that's roughly 356,000 signatures.
That's a lot of signatures.
Oh, yeah, yeah, by anybody's measure.
Yeah.
If you're seeking to change a statute or to add a statute, then the number of signatures is 10% of the votes cast in the last gubernatorial election for governor. And that number in 2022 is roughly 237,000. So even if you're going with the lower percentage, you're still needing about 250,000 signatures on your petition to qualify your initiative to make it to the ballot. And as I mentioned, in the upcoming election, there are 2 initiatives that were started by the citizens, and the Secretary of State has certified the petitions as containing the minimum number of signatures required. There have been some initiatives that appeared to have contained the minimum number, but through legal challenges, it has been determined that they did not, and those initiatives are not going to appear on the ballot.
And one of those we covered yesterday with former Attorney General Terry Goddard, that's the so-called dark money initiative, and Terry's been pushing for this thing for six years, and he got enough signatures and got past court challenge, and it's on the ballot.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and also interesting, at least in my mind, is the number of initiatives that don't make it. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in the last election, which was in 2020, there were 39 ballot initiatives filed, but only 2 were certified. That's
really
about a 5% rate.
Yeah.
On average, there are about 6% of the ballots filed that become certified, but it still amounts to only a couple of citizen initiatives every election. And in fact, consistent with that average, we have 2 citizen initiatives on the upcoming ballot.
What about this one for a lieutenant that would create a lieutenant governor position in the state of Arizona? Where did that come from? That was not a citizen initiative.
No, that was not. That was referred by the legislature. That is Proposition 131. And as I think most of your listeners understand, there are 2 ways to get on the ballot. One is through a legislative referral, and the other one is through a citizen initiative. On this ballot, there are 8 legislative referrals, and Prop 131 is one of the 8. So under this measure, if it's passed, Arizona will join 45 other states that have lieutenant governors. So currently, Arizona is one of only 5 states that doesn't have a lieutenant governor. So what is a lieutenant governor? Well, as the name suggests, it's a elected official who takes over if the governor dies, resigns, or is removed from office. Right now, we don't have a lieutenant governor, and in fact, if the governor is unable to serve, then the Secretary of State, which is a separate elected office, becomes governor.
As has happened in my some 30 years in the state, it's happened a couple of times.
Well, in the history of the state, it's happened 6 times.
Has it really? Six?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's not an uncommon occurrence.
No.
Now, the interesting thing is you can have a representative from another party succeed a governor who dies, is removed, or is incapacitated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Under this proposal, the governor and the lieutenant governor would run on a joint ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be members of the same party, and the succession would not, under any circumstance, change party affiliation. So you wouldn't go from, instance, a Republican governor to a Democrat governor because of the governor's death or incapacity.
Mm-hmm.
You would go from a Republican to a Republican in that hypothetical. So if this measure passes, and it just requires a simple majority, then Arizona will have a lieutenant governor, which will function for all intents and purposes as, you know, essentially, if it were a president, it'd be a vice president.
Is there a role for this person other than just kind of a governor in waiting?
Well, that's an interesting question. If this measure passes, then the legislature will determine what the duties of the lieutenant governor will be.
Hmm. Voter ID is going to be on the is a measure, correct?
Yes. So this seems to be kind of a hot button issue. This was another legislative referral. This is Prop 309, and it concerns both mail-in ballots and in-person voting. And as we've spoken of on other shows, about 90% plus voters do it by mail. So mail-in is by far and away the way that most people vote.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, and I'm sure you know this from voting by mail, all you need to do is really sign the envelope.
Yep.
Put it in the mail, your vote counts. Under Prop 309, that would change. And it would make it, I think, by most analyses, more difficult to vote by mail because you would be required to add 2 new pieces of information. In addition to having your affidavit, which we currently have, you would have to include your date of birth, and you'd have to have a voter ID number. And you'd have to include that information on your mail-in ballot in order for it to count. The voter ID number would either be the number on your driver's license or government-issued ID card, or it would be the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. Currently, it's really easy to vote by mail. Under Prop 309, if it passes, it's going to be a little more difficult to vote by mail. And as I mentioned, more than 90% of all voters vote by mail because it's so convenient.
Sure.
Prop 309 would also change the way that people vote in person. Currently, a voter is able to present either a photo identification or, if the voter doesn't have a photo ID, 2 pieces of non-photo identification as an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this would be like a utility bill or vehicle registration or something like that. Under this proposal, a voter would need to present a form of photo ID while voting in person, and there would be no exception for 2 pieces of non-photo identification. So every voter would be required to present either a driver's license or a government-issued ID at the polls in order to be eligible to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So Prop 309 would add additional requirements to both mail-in voting and also in-person voting. And the last thing I want to say is that most of the states have some form of voter ID required at the polls. In fact, 35 states require identification. So Arizona isn't outside of the norm with regard to requiring identification, but 309, I think, increases the type of information that's required in order to cast a ballot.
We have time for one more, Don Luce.
Well, let's talk about another measure which will be on the ballot. This one is a citizen initiative, so they require the, you know, quarter of a million signatures necessary to get it on.
And those are the valid signatures. So
that's right.
If you want to get on the ballot, you better have like maybe 100,000 buffer or something.
Now, this is really, it's quite interesting by reason of its scope and also the subject matter. It would cap interest on medical debt at essentially 3%. So if you have a bill from a healthcare provider and you're being charged 12% a year, on the balance, under this proposal, you couldn't be charged more than 3% a year.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so that would, I think the thinking is that would make medical bills easier to pay if you're not constantly fighting a high interest rate.
Right.
But the measure does more than that. And when I said earlier that I think it's interesting by reason of its scope, this is what I mean. It protects real property and personal property from claims of creditors more than the existing law does. So, for instance, everyone who owns a home in Arizona that they use as their primary residence has a homestead exemption. Mm-hmm. And that is an amount of equity that no creditor can touch. Mm-hmm. So you can file bankruptcy, and as long as your equity doesn't exceed the homestead exemption amount,
they
you get
can't
to keep
take
your
home.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. That's currently $150,000. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Under this initiative, that would be raised to $400,000.
Mm.
So that's nearly a threefold increase in the amount of equity that Arizona residents can retain in their home, and the creditors are not able to touch it for payment of judgments and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It would also increase other types of personal property, household furnishings from $6,000 to $15,000, motor vehicles from $6,000 to $15,000, and money in banks from $300,000 to $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So this citizen initiative, mm-hmm. which is going to be on the November ballot, does two things. Caps interest rates on medical debt, and also increases substantially the amounts for exempt property that citizens can keep, even if they have creditors with judgments or other forms of liens or attachments.
Okay, good information. Let's do some more of them for your October visit. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right. Don Luce of Luce Law Group offices in Tucson and Phoenix, author of Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books, very popular, both in their second printing. Don, hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Bill. You too.
All right. We're going to do it right there. We'll be back in 23 hours with our Friday edition of The Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Attorney Don Luce, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great afternoon.